This is Leonard Nimoy. The First Great Crusade ended in the triumphant capture of Jerusalem from the Seljuk Turks and the establishment of a Christian kingdom that was to last for two centuries. The knights who had answered the call of Pope Urban II to participate in the crusade must have felt themselves blessed men indeed. For had not the Pope himself promised that their journey should count as full penance for their sins? Had they not triumphed over the Antichrist? Were they not truly invincible? One of these brave and noble men was Sir Guy of Harcourt. He chose not to remain in the Holy Land once it was conquered for Christ, but to return home to Europe.
It seems as if the Pope's promise has been well kept, Sir Guy. Our lands have been protected and have flourished in our absence.
Deus vult, as God wills it.
Look, the peasants have seen our approach. They're coming down from their fields to cheer our return.
Raise high our banners, so they shall know once again we have been victorious.
Indeed. When have you ever not been victorious?
As Sir Guy rode in triumph through the village and up the winding road to his castle, it did indeed seem as if absolute peace and safety had been achieved. His borders were secure, his people happy and flourishing. All that remained was for him to enjoy the fruits of his labors. And that's only the beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. Five nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, The Master of Harcourt, by Percy Grainger. Our stars, Fletcher Markle, Ben Wright, and Peggy Hazard.
In the days following his return from the Holy Land, Sir Guy of Harcourt experienced for the first time in his life the sensation of peace. He did not have to be on his guard, nor had he to worry about whence the next attack might come. There had, however, been a curious incident, and at a feast held in the castle, it was discussed in whispered tones.
They say it happened last night as a cloud passed over the moon.
The captain of Sir Guy's horsemen was sitting astride his mount when, for no apparent reason, the beast reared up and threw him.
He struck his head as he fell, killed instantly.
This same valiant captain saved Sir Guy's life in the Holy Land, a fearless soldier.
And an excellent rider. How could such a thing happen?
Oh, hush, here comes Sir Guy now, with his wife and his old counselor, Baldwin.
Will you dance, my lord?
No, I've no leg for dancing tonight. But perhaps Lord Amelie will escort you.
Oh, with pleasure, Sir Guy.
They move gracefully, do they not?
I suppose so.
Music is indeed the harmony of the spheres, and the very opposite of the discord of war.
How much longer, think you, will these inactive days of peace continue?
Let us hope forever, my lord.
I do not think that possible.
What enemy is there within 100 miles to challenge us? Years ago, you defeated the barbarians to the west and north, then the Saracens in the south, and the Huns from the east. And now you have returned from Jerusalem where the infidel himself has been vanquished, and the Holy Sepulchre is safe under the protection of Godfrey of Bouillon. The Pope has pardoned you all your sins. Truly are you blessed among men.
My skill is for war. Mine attraction is to mine enemy.
Then permit your old counselor to make a suggestion. Let us organize a tourney. We'll invite everyone from far and wide.
Mock battle?
Well, in honor of your triumphant return.
Jousting is a sport for idle men. It's a useless risk of life. I want a holy cause and a worthy opponent.
Well, unfortunately, there seem to be none at the moment. Now, listen to me. Tomorrow, let us venture down to the village. It is market day, and you have not yet seen how the people have fared in your absence. Your subjects love you and long to see you, and the distraction will do you good. Ah, this is the kind of day we live through fire and thunder for. A lovely spring day to clear the mind of noxious thoughts.
Yes, I suppose it is.
What occupies your mind, my lord?
My captain. And why he should have been thrown from his horse.
Ah, it was an accident, sire. It has no meaning. Ah, smell the blossoms. And look, they have come to the village.
Fish, fresh fish and oranges.
Old woman?
Yes. Oh, your lordship.
Give me an orange.
Why, certainly. Let me find the best.
It doesn't matter which. That one will do. And here's for your trouble.
Silver scholar, that's too much. I have no change.
Keep it.
Thank you. God bless you, Sir Guy.
The oranges have grown larger in our absence.
What's that hammering?
Ah, a newcomer to our village, I'm told, my lord. A carpenter. He occupies the stall once owned by Gerhard the Saddler. None of the local people would take it because they thought it was bewitched.
Pagan superstition. Let us meet this fellow. Good day, sirrah.
Oh.
Did we startle you?
It's nothing, my lord. Forgive me.
What is your name?
Only God knows that for certain, but I am called Cedric.
Your face is new.
No, it is very old.
I mean in our village. My counselor tells me you are a carpenter.
Yes.
Our savior was a carpenter. It is a noble profession. What are you making?
A coffin.
Has someone died?
No, but someone will.
Who?
I mean, someone always does.
Why did you look frightened when I first spoke to you?
It was nothing. A mighty Christian warrior such as yourself would only laugh, but... Well, there is an ancient superstition in our trade that if anyone speaks as the last nail is being driven into a coffin, it means the coffin is meant for him. But it is only a superstition, my lord.
It is good you assure me thus. Good day, carpenter, and I hope you find a buyer soon for your coffin. What are you laughing at, you old goat?
The look on your face when the carpenter told his story.
Pagan superstition.
So that coffin did look a pretty decent fit. Now, shall we walk through the rest of the village?
No, I've had enough of this dalliance. Let us return to the castle.
Baldwin?
Yes, my lady.
Have you spoken yet with my husband today?
I'm on my way to see him now. We must discuss the disbanding of the army and the lowering of our levies now that we are at peace. What is the matter?
Well, he has been so restless ever since his return. And just now I asked him if he would ride with me this afternoon, and he flew into a rage.
At what provocation?
I do not know. He acted as one afraid.
I have never known Sir Guy to show fear.
But something troubles him more than just the restlessness of the recent days. See if you can discover what it is.
My lord. My lord.
What do you want?
I have drawn up your orders for the army to be disbanded.
What? Talk you of disarming?
Why, yes, as we agreed.
Come over here to the window. Look you there. What do you see?
Nothing. Only the battlements.
Above the battlements.
Ah, I see a bird in flight.
A raven. A lone raven. It is a sign, Baldwin, a messenger from mine enemy. He has been chivalrous enough to give me warning.
Your enemy, my lord?
Death. The angel of oblivion.
Sir Guy of Harcourt, triumphant in battle, standing at a casement window high in his castle, master of all he surveys, has just turned calmly to his old and trusted counselor and made a most startling announcement.
Death cannot be an enemy, my lord.
No. Yet look at the signs. Was not my captain killed, the very man who saved my life? What should be the meaning of this?
It is not given to us to know these things.
And the carpenter with his coffin, what of that?
I send to the village then and have the coffin destroyed.
I already have.
Then there is no need to carry this foolishness further, my lord.
But what good will it do when the cock did not crow this morning?
I do not know how to answer you.
Do not worry, Baldwin. I have not gone mad. We shall treat this enemy as we would any foe. We will respect him as a worthy opponent and take appropriate measures. Come over here to my table. I have been drawing up plans to strengthen the castle's fortifications.
My lord, your soldiers have gone mad. They are tearing up the gardens.
It's all right, Matilda. I gave them orders to do so.
You did?
They are digging wells. The castle must have its own water supply. We must no longer be dependent on the public wells, which may be exposed to contamination and which lie outside the protection of our walls.
But must it be my beautiful garden that pays the price? Baldwin!
Well, I must say I have long argued that we should have an independent source of water. What if we were attacked and laid siege to?
You see, my dear, Baldwin understands these things. And now, as to the disbanding of the army, that, of course, is out of the question. And the taxes and other levies on grain and so forth must be kept at the same levels as before.
The peasants will not like that, my lord.
Of course not. They never do. Their security comes from me, from my might. But whence comes my security?
That you must get from God.
Of course. But the army stays at its present level. I have also this day dispatched couriers to the four corners of the earth to fetch to me the finest doctors of medicine. I shall establish here the finest and most modern of laboratories where they may work without impediment to discover the cures that will check death at every turn. Excuse me, I must see to the procuring of the equipment they shall need.
Why talks he of death? What has put this fear into him?
I do not think he is afraid. Sir Guy is a soldier. His habit is to fight, and he'll be prepared to fight. That he now chooses to call his enemy death is but an allegory, a symbol. It cannot lead to any harm.
It does seem better for having something with which to occupy his mind.
Well, that is true.
Perhaps it is best to let it be.
And who knows what good may come of it? Did he not say that he would gather together here the great scholars of medical science? Perhaps Harcourt will become a famous center of learning.
Well?
My lord, I...
You what? Are you not yet ready to tell me what you have discovered?
The discoveries you're seeking, the antidotes to the scourges and plagues that ravage mankind? Well, these are diseases that have been with us for centuries. It will take time and knowledge.
Are you asking for still more money? Is that it? Dr. Sutorius, you and your colleagues have been at Harcourt these 6 months past. You have wanted for nothing. I have ransomed my kingdom to provide you with everything you have requested. Is it too much to expect something to show for all this?
It is not in the nature of experimentation such as we're doing.
To expect results?
To predict when such results as you want, as we all want, might be achieved.
How many ways may a man die from disease? 100? 200? 1,000? Have you not, in all this time, been able to find the cure for even one?
No, but you must give us time.
I give you no more time. You are dismissed, all of you, back to from whence you came. I will not live with false hope.
Sir Guy, the doctors have all taken their leave.
Charlatans.
I think that in time they would have made wondrous discoveries.
Time is precisely what we do not have. You defeat an enemy by moving faster than he does.
I know this is true. I taught you these things myself.
I want the garrison doubled and redoubts built up beyond the moat. I want us so securely armed and protected that we shall never again have to be afraid.
Sir Guy, your orders have been carried out. There is an extra line of fortifications around the entire castle. And your armorers are forging new weapons for your fresh recruits.
Every rational step that can be taken to ensure the castle's security has been taken?
Yes.
And my soul is saved? The Pope has promised me salvation?
Yes.
Good.
I will take my leave, my lord.
Wait.
What more can your lordship want?
I want a fortune teller.
What?
A sorcerer. A wizard. One who can see into the future. I want to know what fate is in store for me. Canst thou not minister to a mind diseased and raise out the written troubles of the brain? Sir Guy of Harcourt, a fearless warrior, stares into the eye of dread. It is not given us to know why a man can face the enemy host without flinching, and then tremble before the specters of his own mind. Nor do we know how far he might go in his madness.
A fortune teller, my lord. But they are outlawed by the Holy Church.
Yes, and do you know why? Because it is given them to know the future.
They but claim to know it. No man has such knowledge, for that is the sole province of God.
Do not quote scriptures to me. My need is no less than Saul's when he went to the witch of Endor. I must know what awaits me. My enemy is death, is it not? To see a wizard is no sin. It is as if I were to send a spy into the enemy's camp to ascertain his plan that I might counter it.
And would this content you?
Of course it will content me. Why should it not?
Well, there is a famous so-called seer in the mountains to the east. Her name is Gudrun.
Ah, bring her to me. No, I will go to her in disguise. That way I may test whether she be a true sorceress or not.
Yes?
Are you Gudrun?
I am.
It is said you can see into the future.
Come closer. Who are you?
A peasant?
I do not think so.
I am dressed in peasant's clothing.
But there is an aura about you, and the cross of Christ shines upon your chest.
I do not see this.
You are one of noble birth who has been to the Crusades.
Ah, this is true. You are indeed a seer. But that is the past. I am here to know the future.
Come closer. This is strange.
What is?
I sense that you are a man of great power, yet you are afraid. Fear in the powerful is dangerous.
Tell me my fate.
Bend forward, that I may see your reflection in the cauldron.
Well, what do you see?
A copper image. Yours and behind you. The coat of arms of a noble house. A scarlet dress across a field of bloom.
With the fleur-de-lis and the rising sun?
Yes!
Those are my armorial bearings.
But something is amiss. The shield is backwards. The sun rises in the west.
What does that mean?
That you shall live invincible until the day the sun rises in the west.
But that's not possible. Therefore, I am safe, for the sun can never rise in the west. Old woman, give me thy mitten. I'll have it filled with gold crowns and return to thee.
Oh, my lord, you are back.
Yes.
And are you satisfied?
Indeed. I have nothing to fear until the sun rises in the west.
You shall be an old man ere that happen.
Yet this was the prophecy. She saw a double image in her cauldron, mine and that of my coat of arms reversed.
Well, as long as it has finally set your mind at rest.
Still, I do not rightly understand the meaning of it. Did she interpret correctly, do you think?
I'm sure she did.
What do you think it means?
Oh, I think, my lord, it is a sign from God chiding you for your foolishness.
I want more grain requisitioned from the peasants.
What?
We are not well enough provisioned here.
We've never lacked for food.
And more men must be conscripted.
But you have already doubled the size of the garrison.
Then double it again.
It is planting time, my lord. The men need it on their farm.
I want to see soldiers on every rampart, at every gate, and in every tower. Why do you stand there gaping? I ask you for advice, and all I get is the wrong advice. Carry out my orders at once.
It has all been done as you commanded.
The castle granaries are full?
To the bursting point, and your hunters are killing and dressing twice the usual supplies of meat.
And my men?
Every able-bodied man has been pressed into service.
Are we safe?
Are you asking my opinion as your counselor?
What do you mean?
As the man who was your teacher as a child, who has guided you ever since, whose word you have always trusted?
Yes, of course.
Then in my judgment, Sir Guy, yes, the measures you have taken are sufficient.
Good. Good.
Is that all?
Yes. Yes, you may go. Baldwin.
Yes, my lord.
Build more granaries.
My lady, what's the matter?
I was riding through the village, and the people spat upon me. They shook their fists, and when the captain offered to draw his sword, they threatened him with staves and pitchforks.
Are you all right?
Oh, yes. But the people are starving. Their sons have all been taken from them. You must do something to convince my husband of his madness.
I think I have news that will bring him to his senses.
Outlaws in my domain? Where are they from?
They are your own people, sire.
Nonsense. They have no cause.
They are in revolt over the high taxes. They haven't enough to eat, and winter is coming. Give them back some of the grain in our storehouses. We shall never eat it all. It is already beginning to rot.
I did not realize things had come to such a pass.
They have, and you must redress the situation at once.
You are right. Send out my captains to hunt down every villainous rebel and kill him.
That was not my meaning, my lord.
Burn the forests if necessary. Deny them shelter. Deny them food and fuel. Deny them everything. I am standing face to face with death, and these ungrateful slaves peck at my heels like mongrel curs.
Your captains have ambushed a party of the outlaws, sire.
And?
They are all dead. All but one was taken prisoner to be made to say where the rest of the rebels are.
Has he talked?
He refuses to.
Put him to the torture.
He has been, but even under pain of death he refuses to speak.
That's not possible.
I tell you, he is not afraid.
He bluffs. He must be afraid.
I think not.
Not afraid of death? This is a man I must meet.
He's down here, your lordship. They just brought him back from the rack. He may not be conscious.
Is he chained to the wall?
There he is. We take no chances here.
Give me his key.
Yes, your lordship.
Is that him yonder?
Yes.
Leave me with him.
Alone? Is that wise?
Leave me.
Yes, sire.
Who's that?
Sir Guy.
Come to kill me yourself, tyrant?
Tyrant? Is that what I am called now?
It's what you are.
You would have me believe it's true, then, what they say, that you are not afraid of death. Well, I don't believe it. You're as frightened as the next man. Look,
Look here. I have the key to your chains. What will you do for me to unlock them?
Not what you would have me do.
Not tell me the whereabouts of the rest of your band?
Not if a thousand lives were mine to give.
Very well. I'll make it easy for you. Tell me your father's name.
Why?
Tell me his name, and you shall go free.
My father is dead.
So much the better. I've no care of him one way or the other. It is a painless way to buy your freedom.
What's the trick?
No trick, but to satisfy me that you fear death and will escape it if you can. I am holding the key to your chains. Speak and you go free.
There is no freedom whilst you live.
Do not mince words.
I will tell you nothing.
Don't be a fool. My sword is at your throat. Tell me thy father's name. Tell me thine. Tell me the color of thy beard. Speak!
I will not content you, tyrant!
Then die! Die and take your secret with you.
Leonard Nimoy again, and here's the fourth act of The Master of Harcourt.
I am sorry, but I cannot stay here a day longer, my lady.
Baldwin, you must not leave.
Sir Guy has gone completely mad. He has this very minute come up from the dungeons where he killed a bound prisoner in cold blood for no reason. I can no longer place my own soul in jeopardy by following him.
But you are the only person he will listen to.
He listens to no one anymore. Only the demons that possess his mind. He will not be satisfied.
Baldwin!
I must go.
No, wait. There is a legate from the Pope himself, a bishop, arriving in the courtyard at this very minute. They have heard of my husband's distraction.
Baldwin!
Persuade him to speak to this bishop, to seek the comfort of God. You are the only person who can do this.
Most Reverend Father, are you there?
Yes.
I cannot remember when I made my last confession. I see at times my sins as clearly and with such revulsion as I do at other times with zeal commit them. I cannot sleep. I have just this day killed a man for no reason except that he was brave.
I am told that you have not acted as yourself these several months past.
How else should I act if not as myself? What I do. 'Tis me. I am it. My deeds are no one else's. I am responsible for them.
What is it that troubles you?
I feel myself to be in combat with the angel of death.
Why?
I don't know. And nothing I can do gives me rest from my fear.
Do you trust in God?
With all my heart, yes. And still the specter of death haunts me. There is life after death, this I know. Yet still I am afraid. In light or darkness, I tremble. I look into the eyes of my wife when this mood is upon me and think I would kill even her for a moment's rest.
The man you killed, do you now repent his death?
Yes. But that will not bring him back, or the others whose deaths I ordered. I, who was once blessed by the Pope himself, am now a common murderer.
Listen to me. It is for God to forgive. But this he does to the truly penitent heart. Think what you may do.
I will throw open the granaries.
Ah.
I will release all those I have conscripted into my army that they may go back and tend to their families for the winter. I will undo as much as is in my power to do.
This is well, my son. The darkness of Saul has been upon you.
But even Saul found relief in the music of David.
Perhaps you can too. The world is in order, Sir Guy. You have no cause to fear.
Ah! How do I fare, Matilda?
You are relaxed, my lord.
The music soothes me. And to lie thus with my head in your lap, is it possible there could be no more to it than this?
To what?
To happiness.
I think this is the reward for which you have labored so long.
To lie inert in my lady's lap, plucking blossoms and listening to music?
To feel at peace with yourself, the world, and God.
How silly, to fear death. When that old hag told me I should not die until the sun rose in the west.
We should see that here from our chamber window.
Aye, if we are awakened some morning by the sun striking us full in the face, only then will I tremble. Boy, enough of your music. The incessant plucking of strings is a most pleasing irritant.
Would my lord like to eat now?
It's time to eat again?
'Tis nearly so.
But we just finished eating an hour ago.
As it seems but an hour, because you fell asleep.
Ah. Well, then, by all means, let us eat. I am not hungry, but we live by the clock now. Is that not what peace means? Let us eat.
Good morning, my lady. And how is our new man today?
Gone to the village again to oversee affairs.
He moves among the people without fear.
They are glad to see him recovered. He has directed that the building of a new cathedral be started.
As thanks for his salvation.
He has sent for master craftsmen from far and wide. I am glad he shall have a project to keep him busy, for he has begun to chafe again at the bit.
This will occupy the rest of his days. Indeed, so big does he plan it to be, it shall barely be started at his death if he lived to be 100.
Now, Baldwin, give orders for the gatekeeper to raise the drawbridge.
Yes, sire.
Then join me in my chambers. There I shall give you my final instructions.
My lord?
The drawbridge is up?
It is. But why do you want it raised in the middle of the day? And what do you mean by final instructions?
I want the drawbridge sealed shut.
But how will we enter and leave the castle?
We won't. No one will. There is no need to.
But that is like walling ourselves up in a tomb.
You may leave if you wish. I won't keep you. Anyone may go who wants to.
But you...
I want my armor brought to me, the armor I wore to the Holy Land, and the steed I rode and all my equipage, lance, sword, and helmet.
Why?
Death will evade me no longer. I am going to force him into combat. I shall wait for him in the courtyard.
My lord... Will you not speak to me? Will you not tell me why you sit here?
I cannot, Matilda. I know not why I have been so marked, what great fault I had that I should be thus possessed. What can make a person feel safe if he is insecure in his soul?
My lord.
I do not ask you to share my fate. Go with Baldwin. Leave the castle.
No, I will stay with you, and so will he. You will be cured yet. Put your faith in God.
I cannot. The hag, Gudrun, said I had the cross of Christ burning on my chest, that I was blessed among men, and still it besets me. I am sinking further and further from you. I can feel it, and I cannot stop it. If only I could weep, I could be saved, but I cannot weep.
But you will not die. She said you would not die until the sun rose in the west. And how could that be? I won't lose hope, and I won't leave you.
Look how he sits there, hour upon hour without moving. His lance resting on the ground before him, his visor down.
He will no longer speak.
I have sent for the bishop. Perhaps he will arrive in time.
He is beyond all help.
John, it is growing dark. We must go in.
No.
Go to your chamber and sleep. I shall stay in the next room.
What if something happens to him?
What could happen? We will see him when the sun rises on the morrow.
No. Baldwin!
My lady, what is it? Why have you wakened so early?
The room is filled with light.
But this is not possible. It is dawn and your room faces the west.
But a light shone in my eyes.
And so it comes in from the window. Why, look you. There in the courtyard.
The sun. It catches his armor and reflects in at the window as if it were rising from the west.
Or the cross of Christ burning in his breast.
The sun, rising in the east, caught the armor of the solitary knight seated on his horse in the castle courtyard, and was reflected into Matilda's bedchamber window, creating the illusion that it rose in the west.
The prophecy of the old witch. She said my lord was safe until such a day as the sun rose from the west. Come, Baldwin, we must go out to him at once. My lord.
He does not speak. He won't move.
We must raise the visor on his helmet. We must see if he is still alive.
Be careful, Mathilda. Be prepared for what you might see.
His face, Baldwin, look.
Aged overnight. His hair as gray as mine.
And his eyes open but staring vacantly.
They no longer see. Was it retribution from God for some committed sin? Or merely the blind turning of the wheel of fate? Was he sick in body or in spirit? Will he sleep with the angels or with the demons that tormented him? We do not know. But whether peacefully or not, sleep he will. In the shadow of the cathedral, he ordered to be built.
Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, The Master of Harcourt, was written by Percy Grainger and produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Your host was Leonard Nimoy. Our stars were Fletcher Markle, Ben Wright, and Peggy Hazard. Featured in the cast were Ivor Barry, Valerie Cooney, Larry Moss, and Richard Peel. John Harlan speaking. Associate Director of Mutual Radio Theater is Ken McManus. Sound effects were created by Bud Tollefson. Mark Trella is Production Supervisor. Recording Engineer, Hal McDonald. Music Editor, Lee Ringette. The Elliot Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI. Mutual Radio Theater has been brought to you in part by Sears, a name that means quality and value. A name that you can count on for service and dependability. Sears, where America shops for value. And by Serta Perfect Sleeper Mattresses and Foundations, with a top comfort and deep support for firmness that feels good. And that's a healthy investment in yourself.
This is Lorne Green. Join us again next Monday at this time for another new and original radio play about America's past. Thank you.
Thank you.